Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and I have a wonderful guest joining us today. His name is Serge Kahili King. He's published the world's largest selection of books and tapes on Huna, the Polynesian philosophy and practice of effective living, and on the spirit of aloha, the attitude of love and peace for which the Hawaiian Islands are so famous. In addition to speaking and teaching in many countries, he has formed Aloha International, a worldwide network of teachers, counselors, massage therapists, and more than 10,000 individual members for the purpose of sharing his teachings. On his home island of Hawaii, the Big Island, he gives workshops and trainings throughout the year and holds teaching sessions every month irregularly on cable television in the islands and on the U.S. mainland. So, Serge, thank you so much for joining us today.
Aloha, Caroline.
Aloha, I love that. Okay, and how are things on the Big Island today?
Oh, beautiful as always. No matter what the weather is, it's beautiful here.
Oh, I know. It's heaven on earth. Or at least that's what it's always seemed like to me. You're very blessed to live there. Tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you're not a native Hawaiian, and I'm always interested in what paths led people into the spiritual and the shamanic kind of lifestyle. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, because of some experiences that my father had, he at one time worked for the British government, and he was sent to Hawaii and met a man named Joseph Kahili, who adopted him as his son and took him in for a shamanic training. In Hawaii, it would be called kupua or kalakupua. And so my father trained with Joseph for a long time. And then many, many years later, my father introduced me to the same path. And for 3 years, I worked with my father, and then he died. And then I was invited by the Kahili family to come and visit, and fortunately Joseph liked me and adopted me as a grandson.
Aww.
And then my training was turned over to one of his daughters and a son.
Oh, okay.
So my auntie and my uncle became my teachers.
Oh, that's so wonderful. So you actually were introduced to it, though, at a very young age and grew up with it, so to speak.
That's right. Not formally, the formal training began when I was 14, but mm-hmm. It was always part of our family life.
Oh, that's great to be able to have grown up with that. And then you also went over to Africa for a time, didn't you?
That's right. I was there doing socioeconomic development work, which meant a lot of work in the bush. And while there, I became an apprentice to an African shaman who had known my father.
Oh.
And so for almost 7 years, I was his apprentice.
Okay. And how would you say that African shamanism differs from what you were taught in Hawaii?
Well, you know, fundamentally, shamanism around the world is pretty much the same.
Yes.
But, of course, the biggest difference comes with cultural things and the emphasis they put on certain areas. Mm-hmm. So while I was in Africa, I learned an awful lot about energy and healing energy and how to connect with the nature, but particularly the animal world.
Mm-hmm. There's also an emphasis on working with the ancestors, isn't there?
That was, yes, it is, but that wasn't a big part in the particular culture that I was trained in, which was Hausa. More of the ancestral work came when I was studying with my auntie and my uncle, a Hawaiian auntie and uncle.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that there was so much ancestral work with the Hawaiian, the Huna
beliefs.
Oh, yeah, beliefs.
Very important. Not so much worship as connection.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so for guidance and
yes.
Protection.
And knowledge.
Uh-huh. That's wonderful. And then you came back, and of course you formed the Aloha Project back in 1973, which I love the whole concept that anyone can become a member. It was like Sun Bear's Bear Tribe kind of thing. Anyone from any walk of life could become or can become a member, and they just have to make a pledge to do their best to make the world a better place to live in. That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. Tell us a little bit about the Aloha Project.
Well, the Aloha Project is just that, the whole idea of helping to make the world a better place. And how can I put this? What we do is we offer people lots of suggestions and also encourage them in doing whatever good they are doing. The main thing is to form a sort of a spiritual community where people mm-hmm. feel they're not alone and they are working with other people. And so we connect everybody with our website and with email and with virtual worlds so that people have opportunities to work together in doing and share what they're doing.
Well, that's wonderful. There's such a sense of separation in, I don't know, most of the culture on the mainland, separation from spirit, disconnect with nature and everything. And so I think everybody is looking for a family or a group that they feel that they're part of and can adopt that image of for themselves of who they are.
Sure, because naturally as human beings we are, well, to put it in anthropological terms, we are tribal entities.
Mm.
And so the seeking of a group to share with is natural to us.
Well, the Aloha Project is wonderful. And your whole group, what you're doing there. Now, years ago, you were based in Kauai, but now you have moved over to the Big Island. What drew
That's right.
you to the Big Island?
Well, it was time for a change in my life, a time to grow. I lived on Kauai and worked there and worked with the island itself for 20 years. And then there was a call to for more creativity.
Mm.
And the Big Island was the place for that. The creative energy here is astonishing.
And are you close to the volcano?
Yes, we live in a native forest. That's the actual zoning. And it's about 2 miles in a direct line with Kilauea Crater.
2 miles. Ooh,
yes.
For me, that's a little too close for comfort.
Well, we smell a little sulfur sometimes. You know.
Okay, but you still feel safe and blessed.
Oh, yes. We're on the northern side of the crater, which means nothing is guaranteed. Okay, anybody
yes.
who comes to an island with an active volcano, one of the most active in the world, has got to be willing to take a risk.
Yes.
But historically, where we are, there has not been an eruption for about 700 years.
Wow. Okay, and then you have all that exciting activity going on there with the volcano.
Oh,
that
sure. Anything happens, we can rush right over and see it.
Yes. Oh, look out your window.
Sometimes.
Okay. Oh, my. Okay, well, I You know, you probably don't remember, but I met you many years ago at one of Sun Bear's gatherings. I think it was 1989 at Desert Springs, California. And you gave a talk, and I remember you saying something about how noise can attract the energy or the chi energy or energy to itself, like a big city can attract energy. I don't remember exactly how you worded it.
Okay. I was talking about the fact that, yes, energy does attract energy. So if we want to look for the huge power spots, all we have to do is look at the major cities of the world. Because a couple things happen. One is all of the major cities in the world are on earthquake faults. And that upwelling of earth energy is so strong that, and of a nature that attracts people. And then the people themselves amplify the natural energy. And that's why it just keeps growing like that.
That's very interesting. So power attracts power, so
that's
to
right.
speak.
That's, now, sometimes when it gets too much, we need, you know, you can't ride the top of a wave forever.
Mm-hmm.
So we need that different kind of energy, that relaxation energy of sometimes people do this. Again, all the major cities of the world have their parks where people can walk in quiet. And then usually there are places around these cities that people can go to as well to get relief from that intensity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand that very well because actually I live in the Las Vegas, Nevada area, which is a power spot. And power is like, energy is like electricity. It can be used for any purpose. And so it's been used for many purposes here, but there are vortexes around the valley which create that energy. And so it's also, although most people think of Las Vegas as Sin City, it actually is a very highly spiritual place you tap into that side of it. So this is very interesting. So the island of Hawaii then is a power spot
because of the volcano. Well, because of the volcano, but each of the islands in their own way. They each have a different character.
Yes.
And remember, they're all volcanoes. And so some of them are not active, but the magma's down there, and each one of them acts as a focus and then translates or modifies that energy in its own way.
Ah, okay. So I've always been drawn to Maui, which has Mount Haleakala, the...
Right.
Crater of the sun, so to speak, and I always felt a very powerful spiritual connection there, and so that's connected with the volcano, probably.
Also, you know, what's natural is that people are drawn to the kind of energy that they resonate with most,
true.
That doesn't have to be a lifelong thing because people can change. But when they change, they're drawn to that place that they resonate with in terms of who and what they are at that time.
Okay.
So,
that
there are
makes
people
a lot
who
of
will
sense.
Love Big Island, people who will love Kauai, even people who will love Oahu and Molokai and Maui. Different people are attracted to these places where they want to spend more time.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I still want to live in Maui someday. So I keep one of these days I'll make it over there. Anyway, let's get back to some of your teachings because they're so profound. Of course, I read your book, Urban Shaman, many years ago. But when we met at Sun Bear's Gathering, you gave me that little pink book of Aloha Spirit. And that was so profound. It's just a tiny little booklet, but it had the seven life principles of the Huna philosophy in it. And it was so simple and yet so profound. Would you share a little bit about each one of those principles?
Sure. Let me mention first that we are still producing and distributing that booklet. I'll talk a little bit more about that later if you wish.
Okay,
but
sure.
But as far as the principles go, I was taught these ideas. These are seven ideas. And when we say principles, we don't mean laws.
Right.
So I was taught these ideas by my Hawaiian uncle. And each one of them was based on a Hawaiian word, which has such profound meanings. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to put that in a way that I could teach the Western, mainly Western, but not strictly, but the modern world.
Right.
And so I made English translations of what I thought would be the very, very useful and more easily accessible concepts to most people. So that's what they are. The translations are mine. But interestingly, you'll find these ideas, even as translated, in a lot of religious and spiritual works that have come down through the ages, and you'll find them in Hawaiian proverbs. So let me tell you what they are.
Okay.
The first one is the idea that the world is what you think it is. Now, regardless of what the world is or what's going on, it always filters through your ideas and your beliefs and your expectations and fears and desires, so that what you're experiencing at any time is your version of the world.
Okay, and so it's all about your belief systems, what you believe.
Believe, not just beliefs, because there are habits. There is our physical nature, which differs from person to person. There are memories. There are a lot of influences.
Mm-hmm.
Beliefs are very important, but they're not the only influence, not the only filter, let's put it that way.
Right.
Language is another filter.
Right, and cultural habits.
Traditions and ideas, that's right. But the main thing is everyone interprets that in their own personal way.
Right.
And so it's the personal experience of the world, which is what your world is. The idea, however, behind this is that you can change that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that brings us to the next principle, which is that there are no limits.
Mm.
Now,
I love that. Great.
It is great. But here's a curious thing. It assumes, then, because there are no limits, it leads to the idea that the universe is infinite, and that's nice. But in order to have experience, we have to create limits. Just like in order to play a game, we have to create rules.
Yeah.
So that we can play baseball and with one set of rules and football with another set of rules, those are not laws of the universe. They're designed for creative play. Well, we can only experience when we have rules about how the world works. And that's what we use for creative limitation, let's put it that way. We can also use it for uncreative limitation, but that's because there are no limits. We can do anything we want with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we can change because there are no limits.
Okay, so that means everything is possible then.
Everything is possible. However, this is a practical philosophy. Everything is possible if you can figure out how to do it.
Yes. Okay.
You've got to remember that part.
Right, because some things have not been invented yet. And
that's right, and amazing things are being invented because someone is able to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we get to the next idea, which is that energy flows where attention goes. Wherever you direct your attention, and no matter how you direct it, with words, with images, with actions, but wherever you direct your attention, your energy moves in that direction, whether it's the direction has to do with your own body or your activities in life. Now, because energy flows where attention goes, it means that if you are really focused on something, you are going to attract other people's energy into that focus.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat in the same way that people are automatically drawn, let's say, to a big fire or to a you know, something stupendously beautiful that happens, like an extraordinary sunset or sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
And people's attention is drawn to that. So we also say energy flows where attention goes, and attention goes where energy flows.
Hmm. Okay. To me, that was the most profound of all of the seven principles. And I saw it as that we feed with our energy. We feed whatever we put our attention to. So you don't want to put attention on things you don't want in your life, because then you're feeding that, and that's what's going to grow. So you need to put attention on the things that you do want, and just focus on those things, because those are the things you want to have grow in your life, right?
Sure. And you don't want to focus on the fact that you weren't focusing correctly. You know, a lot
yes.
of people get into that trap.
Oh, yes, the guilt
so
trip.
Say,
that,
you know, focus on what you want and not on what you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
But if you find yourself focusing on what you don't want, simply make the shift.
Hold on just a second.
Well, we're getting some reinforcement there.
Oh, I have three large wolf dogs that something set off. Sorry for that.
They're just saying, you're right, you're right.
Yeah, they're agreeing with us. Okay. So, humans, we seem to have this innate desire to find what's wrong with things.
Well,
and especially ourselves. We tend to beat ourselves up if, you're not doing this right. You know, you're supposed to be focusing on only the good.
I don't think that's innate.
I think
that's cultural.
Ah, so it's a trained
because there are cultures that don't do that. Yeah, there are cultures that don't do that.
Oh.
So
well, that's nice to know.
You know. Oh, sure. And it's important to know. So
yes.
that we don't think we're stuck with that. It's training, that's all.
Yeah, that's good news. It's what I call programming then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Well, wow. I'm so happy to hear that there are places in the world where people don't just naturally do that, because
that's right.
we seem to be overwhelmed with it here on the mainland. I mean, people worry about their diets, and they're mad at themselves because they had a moment of weakness and they ate a piece of cheesecake. And oh, my God, you know.
And all unnecessary, but it is there. And that's why we want to help as many people as possible realize that there are other ways to think and act.
Yes. That's
now we
that's
go into the next. Yeah, and one way is by the next principle, which says now is the moment of power.
Mm. Oh, that's powerful.
Here's the only time where you can actually do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot act in the past. You cannot act in the future. You can think about them, but the only place you can act is here and now.
Mm-hmm.
And some people can even make themselves sick trying to act in the past by continually thinking of what they shouldn't have done or what they should have done, and trying to act in the future by, what's going to happen? What if everything goes wrong?
Mm-hmm.
That creates a lot of stress and tension in the body, because the body lives in the present.
Yes.
So the more we can, I'm not saying you have to stay there all the time, but the more we can remember that here is the place of action and the only place of action where action and change are possible, then this is going to create an awful lot of relief.
Oh, definitely.
And the Hawaiian culture is very good as a model for this, because in the Hawaiian language, there is really no word for or concept of past or future.
Hmm. Really?
When I say no. Oh, yeah. We can talk about things that are over and done with, or we can talk about things that haven't happened yet, but there's no present, there's no future tense, and there's no past tense in the language.
Wow. That is amazing.
So, you know, obviously that gives rise to a very different way of thinking.
Well, it does, because I know so many people that spend their lives rehashing memories of things that they were unhappy with, or things that happened.
And all that does is make them unhappy in the present.
Right, right. And they're not living in the now because their focus, their mind is somewhere else. Their mind is still back there in the past. And and then on the other hand, I know people that worry constantly about the future and should they be doing this and where should they go and what, you know, what should they be planning for? And I'm like, you know.
And the other extreme is people who develop a very narrow view of the present moment. And that can produce problems because they don't think of consequences. So we have all these ways of messing it up alongside all these ways of making it work.
Yes. But as long as we can remember to stay focused on being here now in this moment and living it to the fullest and with love
and
joy.
Let's explain the moment. The moment is whatever your range of focus is.
Mm-hmm.
So we can focus broadly. The moment can be an awareness of what's going on in the world so that we can do some healing work right now. Or it can be very, very narrow in terms of walking across the room to pick up a book.
Mm-hmm.
So, the present moment is not a specific unit of time. It's a range of awareness.
Right. That's what I was just thinking. It's all about awareness because so many people seem to be sleepwalking through life because they're either in the past or in the future. They're not in the present moment. But when you live in the present moment, you have this amazing awareness of everything that's happening around you and of life. And that's where the energy is to be creative and to really do something with your energy and with your life.
Sure. So one of the things that helps you stay more in the present moment or act more in the present moment is the next principle, which says it's based on the word aloha in Hawaiian, which means love. But as a principle, it says to love is to be happy with someone or something. Love has nothing to do with pain in this point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Love is the act of giving, receiving the pleasure of being with or being aware of or sharing with someone or something.
Yes, of being alive.
That's
of
right.
Actually feeling alive. Yes.
Feeling alive and enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
So
you know, love
when
is,
there are things, the more things there are that you love, that you have this sense of pleasure and sharing, why the more alive and the more rich the present moment becomes and your life, all life becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, when we say aloha in Hawaiian, we use it for hello and goodbye, but what it really means, it's a blessing of love. We say love to you when we greet each other, and we say love to you when we part.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's wonderful. You know, for a lot of people, love is a confusing word because we use that to say I love you to the person that is most important in our life, and we use it to say I love French fries and I love going to the football game, and you know, so it's confusing because we don't, you know, we only have the one word. But when you realize that it's all about being alive and being here now and being joyful about it, as aloha means, that's beautiful.
That's another dimension. Also, very much in modern times, there's the idea that love involves pain. And so people confuse it with pain and confuse it with jealousy and confuse it with all kinds of stuff that are all from fear and anger, not love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So then we come to the next principle, which is another way of being more alive. And that's it's based on a word called, a very misunderstood word called mana. But it says that all power comes from within. And what that means is from spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And and spirit is everywhere in everything. So, but power comes from inside.
Right.
Sometimes we give power to outside things. And to that degree, weaken ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we're convinced that power is outside of us, and of course that weakens ourselves. Now remember, It doesn't mean that because power comes from within, we can do anything we want. We can do anything we know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference there. But remembering that the power comes from within, here's the tricky part. It's a fantastic part, but it's tricky. And that is taking responsibility for your own life.
Well, yes, that's the kicker. That's and that's the one
right.
thing that a lot of people don't want to do. They want somebody to fix them, or they
right.
or they want somebody out there to make them happy, and they don't yep. realize that it's an inside job. The happiness yep. is within you. You just have to find it and connect with right. it and recognize it and understand that this is who you really are. You are part of this great spirit of love that is joyful and happy.
That's right. Now, even so far as we've been talking, you can understand that these principles are not unique to Hawaiian culture.
Right.
What's unique is the way that they're put together as a whole. But mm-hmm. these ideas have been around forever.
Yes, but
in
they're scattered. You know, they're scattered through all sorts of scriptures and everything. What
That's
you
right.
did, Serge, is that you brought them all together as seven principles that, like you said, one leads into the other. And it's so profound. I want to thank you for doing that. And everybody should get this little pink book. But there's one more principle to
yes,
go.
This is the one a lot of people have difficulty with. The principle says that effectiveness is the measure of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very practical principle. It's saying that if it works, it's true. And at first, people get a lot of resistance to that, but then I explain how we use that in life all the time. Right now, we are using the most popular calendar in the world. So I ask people what the date is, and they'll usually tell me according to that popular calendar. There are hundreds of calendars. That's not the only one. Different people look at the time in a different way, but this is the popular one. And mm-hmm. so when we say that this is a particular date, that's made up, but it sure is useful.
Yes, it's so, just a way of keeping order.
And it's helped us have this conversation at a particular time, even at a great distance.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the numbers and the times and the dates are all made up, they're very useful. And so we normally act as if it's true that this is a particular date and this is a particular time. That's what the principle means.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It says that effectiveness mm-hmm. is the measure of truth.
Yes.
Now, there may be an absolute truth outside of us, but if it's outside of us, how are we ever going to know it?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Michael Harner, I just want to interject. Dr. Michael Harner of the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, he says it a different way. He says the proof of any teaching is, does it work?
Exactly. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very shamanic concept, regardless of culture.
Yes. And it's so true, because you can look at all the things that are taught out there, and people get all enthusiastic about some of the teachings and, oh, this is the way it is. And then they find out down the road that it's not the way it is.
A different way, too.
Right. But the proof is, it doesn't really work. Does it really mm-hmm. do what you think it's going to do? You know,
right.
And so effectiveness, for us to be effective, we would actually see the results of our effectiveness around us.
That's
right?
Right. Yes. And so this is very important. You know, shamanism, regardless of where it is essentially a healing vocation.
Yes.
A healing of body, mind, and circumstances. And the healing is more important than the method. If it works, we have a saying. We call this philosophy huna, and we have a saying that says, if it works, it's huna.
Ah.
Because it doesn't matter what it is.
Right.
In healing, it could be surgery or chemotherapy that'll work for a particular person. It could be shamanic dancing and herbs or meditation that would work for another person. What matters is what works for that person.
Yes. And what affects them and how effective it is.
That's right.
Okay. Well, tell people how they can get your little pink book, because everyone should have this.
Okay. We have this pink book in English that we send out free to individuals anywhere in the world. All they have to do is go to huna@huna.org and request a copy, and we'll send it either physically or as a PDF, whatever they want. And then we have it in about 25 different languages, also on our website, for free download.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a book that really teaches people the power of blessing.
Right.
And which is what the Aloha Spirit is all about.
Right. Now, I noticed when I went to it on your website, and I didn't see the seven principles there, although the little book you gave me years ago had the seven principles on the first page.
That has to do with cost effectiveness, unfortunately, because it's far more expensive to print these booklet now than it used to be.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
But we have the principles all over our website in many different ways. And
okay.
So they, of course, they're still available. We
okay,
have over 300 articles on this knowledge that are for free. And we have opportunities for giving and receiving healing online.
Mm.
And we also have, like I said, we have meeting places, as you mentioned earlier, here in Hawaii. But we also have an island in a virtual world where people from around the world can gather and do healing together. And we meet once a week there, and people come from everywhere in avatar bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But we meet in a three-dimensional village where we can walk around and sit around a circle and in beautiful surroundings. And then once a month I give a lecture there in the virtual world, and then I come out and give the same lecture here in the physical world.
Oh, okay. Now, your virtual world is a computer program, sort of,
computer
right?
Program, right. We work through a virtual world called Second Life, and which is free to join, and secondlife.com is where they can go for that, and www.huna.org is where they can go for lots of information on this knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm so pleased that you offer so many things that are free to people, because I know I was taught long ago that the knowledge is given us by the Creator and the Spirit, and that we should not put big price tags on it. You know,
well, you can't put price tag on the knowledge itself. No, that's not correct. Mm-hmm. That's not right.
Right.
And there are many, many ways to help people in healing without cost. But the way we look at it, for instance, when I give a workshop, the knowledge is free. There's all kinds of places where you can get it. So I only charge for my teaching skill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different thing. Just like anyone with a skill or a talent, they have a right to charge for that.
Yes. And
but they
you
can
have
get the same... I'm just saying, they can get the same knowledge for free elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a great teacher. And I'm so pleased with what you're doing. Teach us more a little bit about the blessing, because I don't think people realize how important it is to acknowledge the good in their life and around them.
Yeah, let me share that, because this is important. People don't have a clear idea, or let me put it this way. I like to give a clear idea of how to bless that makes a lot of sense and is very effective.
Mm-hmm.
When people think of blessing, they may think of, giving good wishes to something. And so sometimes people something bad is happening, how can I bless that? Well, you don't. That would be silly.
Mm-hmm.
We use a concept from Hawaiian based on a Hawaiian word, which is ho'omaika'i. And basically this means to strengthen the good. So when you're blessing something, you are blessing a particular thing that you want to strengthen. So you don't say, well, I bless that person. You know, that's very nice sounding, but it doesn't do anybody much good if you don't have a clear idea of what you mean by that. But
mm-hmm.
if you say, well, I bless that person's ability to to heal themselves. I bless the strength of their heart. I bless the peace in their soul. I bless whatever it is you're blessing, you bless what you want to increase.
Right, exactly. And that's, talk about confusion. Look at the people, well, it's a huge thing that happens in the world whenever there's some sort of catastrophe like Katrina or Sandy, and everybody's like, oh, bless those people, but they don't specify.
Right.
And, yeah, so and you don't, don't want to bless the problems. Yes.
Right.
Go ahead.
So often when there's a disaster, what we'll do is we'll spend time blessing the helpers.
Mm-hmm.
People usually forget about them, but when there's a disaster, local people jump in to help their neighbors.
Yes.
And people have come from far outside to come and help them. Well, those are helpful people. So we bless the helpers. We bless the peacemakers when there's places. We bless the ability of people to recover from a storm or something like that. So you bless the things that you want to strengthen so that the healing happens faster.
I love the way you say that, because it's so important to remember that we want to send attention or you want to send energy to the good and not
That's right.
The bad part. We don't want to bless the catastrophe that happened. We want to bless the people's ability to survive and to have good lives and to be healthy and to be able to rebuild and have a good future. So
That's right.
You're just, yes. That's a wonderful way of looking at things. And I don't think people realize how important it is to be specific, mm-hmm. whether you're thinking of it as praying or blessing, to be very specific about what you're praying for or what you're blessing in a situation.
Being specific focuses the energy more.
Mm-hmm.
The more general you are, the less effect you're going to have. I mean, it's nice to have a good thought in general. May all living beings live in peace and harmony. I mean, that's a beautiful thought.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of so spread out that in practical terms, it's going to have less effect than focusing on a specific good for a specific problem.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's all about focus and sending, being aware that you're sending energy and that you're sending the energy to the right place or to the right thing.
Well, to the place that you believe is the right place. That's all you can do.
Well, of course. Yes. And we all have our own belief systems.
And you got to trust yourself for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have to trust yourself that it will have a good effect if your intention is good.
Mm-hmm.
It may be used differently than you expect, but it will always have a good effect if it's coming from love.
Yes. So that's really the key to all of your teachings, really, is to see the world through eyes of love and speak words of love and energize.
Forgive yourself when you don't.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No guilt trips.
That's right.
Okay. All right. That is absolutely wonderful. Now, I know you teach people, you train teachers of the Aloha
way of life. I used to have, let me put it this way. I give people the tools to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And I give people the freedom to use my books as a basis for the teaching if they wish.
Oh, okay.
So in that sense, we encourage teachers.
Mm-hmm.
We have an online course for training teachers based on all of my years of study and experience, but I no longer do a specific course, live course for that.
Oh, okay.
There are so many opportunities for people today, so I just provide them with the materials that will help them if they want.
Okay, that's wonderful. Do you have a retreat center or something like that on Hawaii?
Couldn't really call it a retreat center. We do have a center in the forest, and we use it for, it has our offices, but it also has a classroom, and that's where we give our workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I teach once a month an open public teaching where I tell a Hawaiian legend and then give that a meaning so that people can learn how to do something. And I do that at our local community center on the first Sunday of the month.
Oh, okay. All right, that sounds good. I'm curious, do the Hawaiians have any prophecies about the future? Like, I mean, you know, we're coming up to the Mayan calendar end date, and everybody's
even
so
excited. Even the Mayans don't believe anything special is going to happen then.
Yes, it's
as far as prophecies go, this is very interesting. And from the Hawaiian point of view, in the past, and even now, if a Hawaiian makes a prophecy, it's based on what's going on right now. Because remember, they don't think of the future as a place.
Mm-hmm.
The future is only a potential. And so there are no long-term prophecies simply based on a vision. If a Hawaiian does that, it's something they've learned from another culture.
Ah.
Because, like I said, there's no future tense.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the Hawaiian language, if you talk about the future, all you're talking about is what's going on right now and about something that hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So that's why there's no long-term prophecies. However, they were very, very good at observation, so they could look at situations and see what that was likely to develop into.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, the real ones were the special type of person called a kaula, was a prophet magician, which meant that he would look at things, see where that was probably leading, and then give ways to either enhance that, strengthen it, reinforce it, or change it. There would never be anything that was unchangeable.
Yes. In the Hawaiian way of thinking, then, nothing is written in stone. It still has to develop, and it could be anything. It's not necessarily...
Well, sure, the future is flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Because it hasn't happened yet.
Yes. I like that. Yes, people seem to want to cling to old prophecies that talk about a doomsday, and I don't understand that.
Mind. What they want is two things. A feeling of security and a desire to punish the baddies that they feel are baddies. Because they feel so helpless about it.
So they're looking for
someone. Something or someone will come, a big daddy or rarely, but a big mommy, will come and put things right. Or there'll be a sudden transformation of consciousness, suddenly without any effort.
Okay.
And I'm not a follower of that idea at all.
No, I that's why I laughed, because our lives, we're growing and we're processing all the time. And it's sometimes a slow process as we begin to have new realizations and our minds open more, our hearts open more. And we're always a work in progress, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we have something laid out that we can say, all right, on such and such a day, I'm suddenly going to be enlightened.
Right.
It's something we grow into.
That.
Yes.
That's right. But they want to have the experience without any effort, and they want to have that feeling of a strange kind of security.
Mm. Or justice. They call it
justice,
which really is based on judgment. And and as soon as we begin judging, then we've crossed the line into the dark side, I think, because that's judgment is not productive in any way.
Nope. And yet we have this dance that we have to do as human beings in the fine distinction of things. And that can get really confusing. How do I know when I'm judging? How do I know when I'm simply discerning? How do I do all of this? Well,
right.
If you step back and you do it from love, then that's clarity.
Yes. That's always the key, isn't it? What would be the loving thing to say in this situation? Or how would be the loving way to act in this situation?
Mm-hmm. What will help people?
Okay. Serge, we're running out of time. I have so much enjoyed having you on the show, and I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot from your wisdom. Thank you so much. Okay, thank you. And for all of you out there, next week I have another special guest, Wobbin Nguyen, who was Sun Bear's right hand for many years, co-wrote several of the books with him, and led in forming the Bear Tribe and everything. And so she will be with us on December 21st. Now, it's fitting because Sun Bear wrote a book called Black Dawn, Bright Day, which he talked about prophecies. And so we will see how next week goes. Thank you so much. May the sun bless your face. May the waters bless your body. And may all nature sing in your presence.